as the year draws to a close, we'll reflect on the events and issues that dominated the headlines and fueled national conversation.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. Comprehensive long-term deal with Iran will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
I am officially running.
I'm running for
president of the United States.
Will be the next governor and lieutenant governor of this Commonwealth of Kentucky.
More than 120 people have been killed in Paris.
On this week's Eastern Standard, a panel of reporters joins us to look back at 2015 and the events that defined it. We're interested in your questions, comments, and personal stories. What stands out when you think of the past year? What do you see on the horizon for 2016? Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. It's the holiday season, and the end of the year is right around the corner. As a matter of fact, this is the final show, our final Eastern Standard program of 2015. And as a result, we're going to talk about some of the stories and topics that have been on everyone's minds this year, as well as look forward to the year ahead. We'll be discussing results of this year's elections in the Commonwealth and what that means for Kentuckians, as well as how a Kentucky woman became the center of the conversation about a same-sex marriage and the presidential race that has been dominating the headlines, as well as many other topics. And with us to discuss these topics are a panel of journalists. First up, Ronnie Ellis, reporter and columnist with CNHI, Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated, which owns 12 papers across the Commonwealth, including the Richmond Register. Ronnie Ellis, thank you, and welcome back to the studios.
It's good to be back. I always enjoy it.
As do we. Leslie Clark, we met a couple of years ago. Sorry it's been so long since we've spoken. Leslie is White House correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, including the Lexington Herald-Leader. And Leslie, we met at Center College on the day of the vice presidential debate.
Yes, I remember it fondly. Thanks so much for having me back.
Oh, we're very grateful, and we need to have you on a more regular basis, especially during this coming year. Going to be an interesting year, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Also with us, Ryland Barton, Kentucky Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. Ryland, my goodness, in the middle of so many of these stories that we're going to be talking about on today's program. Ryland, thanks once again for making the drive over from Louisville and Frankfort.
Good to be here, John.
Folks, we're going to be interested in hearing from our listeners. Write to us at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We're interested in your questions, your comments, your personal stories, reflections on the news of the past year. wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekueest. And we'll go ahead and open up the phone line right now, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. 8890. And what we are going to do is go around the horn in the order in which we just introduced our guests and ask each of you to talk a little bit about some of the top stories of 2015. We certainly, with this program, always want to talk about the Commonwealth of Kentucky, but we're interested in any stories that, you know, are of major significance and interest to the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So certainly don't need to limit it to things that occurred right here within the state borders. Ronnie Ellis, I'll toss it to you for a kickoff here.
Well, for me and what I do, clearly the biggest story of the year was the governor's race. Contained within that governor's race were other individual big stories. Not only did Matt Bevin surprise everyone by becoming governor, he surprised everyone by becoming the Republican nominee in a really interesting primary in which the person who initially was considered the, if not prohibitive favorite, at least the favorite, James Comer, the agricultural commissioner, was brought down or by some rumors of having abused a girlfriend in college and paying for an abortion. And then, of course, as we move forward in the year, the Kim Davis controversy over same-sex marriage and the ruling by Judge Haburn and eventually the Supreme Court upholding that ruling also came to dominate not only the headlines, but I think was a major factor in Governor Bevin's win. So those were the major stories for me. On top of that, I suppose the the Republican Party's choice to go to a caucus instead of a presidential primary. Not only was that news because of Senator Rand Paul's efforts to run for president while simultaneously running for re-election to the Senate, but Scott Lasley, who chaired the committee that designed the caucus or set up the rules, I think was kind of farsighted and kind of ahead of the game. They deliberately set it up in ways where delegates are assigned proportionally. And consequently, we now have 8 Republican candidates for president who have filed to run in that caucus. So that's going to be a big story going forward.
All right. Let's turn to Leslie Clark. I know, again, as a White House correspondent, you write from a very different perspective, I'm sure. But what are our tops on your list of stories for this past year?
Yeah, we've had an equally tumultuous year up here in Washington, as you probably well know, between the White House with dealing with efforts to battle the Islamic State, and the president going over to Paris to push for his efforts on climate change. We've also been watching pretty pitched battles on both sides of the presidential primaries. We've had, obviously, just an incredible show on the Republican side with Donald Trump throwing his hat in and staying pretty much at the top of the polls for the entire time, despite anything he's had to say that might have infuriated various parts of the electorate. The Democratic side has also been a little spirited, but perhaps less of a contest. It still remains to be seen, however.
All right. Excellent. Leslie, again, we'll draw you back in here on these issues after we hear from Ryland Barton, Kentucky Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. What's on your list at this time of year?
Sure. Stepping back from a lot of the issues that Ronnie was saying, I mean, with Governor Matt Bevin being elected this past November, big story just seems to be Kentucky being an increasingly Republican state. We've seen, you know, over the past few years, I mean, Kentucky presently has 5 out of 6 Republican Congress people, both Republican U.S. senators. But now we're starting to see this onto the statewide level. Republicans taking continuing to protect the agriculture commissioner's spot, but taking the governor's mansion, of course, and lieutenant governor's spot, and now the treasurer's spot as well. And now what we're seeing is the big story being Democrats trying to protect their majority in the state house, which at the moment remains the last line of defense in Republicans having the governor's mansion, the state senate, and the house from being able to just pass if they are able to stay united, pass whatever legislation they please, I suppose. And then going back to the last legislative session, the big story every day you were seeing was about heroin and attempts to try and fix the state's heroin problem. They did pass in the final hours of the legislative session some comprehensive bill, as they say, to try and fix the state's problem. And we've been trying to see if it's working. Certainly, some of those things have been implemented. We've seen needle exchanges and the Good Samaritan law going into effect in various jurisdictions. Finally, another legislative thing. Everybody watching the growing problems in the state's pension systems. The one segment of the state employees' pension fund for hazardous employees or non-hazardous employees. I'm sorry, which is it, Ronnie? I forget now.
I think it's the non-hazardous.
Non-hazardous, 17% funded. It has billions and billions of dollars shortfall. Then, of course, the teachers' pension system is, depending on how you count the numbers, either a little bit above or a little bit below 50% funded. So that's kind of the big suck right now in the state budget. And we'll be looking to see how they navigate around that in the upcoming legislative session.
Going to be a big legislative session. This is the long session.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be hearing a lot more about that as we get closer to January. This is Eastern Standard, our year in review, Reporters Roundtable. Our reporters, Ronnie Ellis, Leslie Clark, and Ryland Barton. We're interested in your feedback. What were the top stories for you, our listeners? 800-621-8890. Email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest, live here on Thursday morning. Okay, the governor's race, big changes in the state house. What? Ryland began to go there a little bit. What are we really going to see change in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Ronnie Ellis, as a result of the change in the governor's mansion?
Well, to some degree, I think the pace and perhaps the depth of change depends upon the outcome in the House. There is some hope by the Republicans of switching enough Democrats or getting enough jobs for Democrats to do that before this session that convenes in January ends. I think that still remains a stretch. If that's not the case, then I think probably what we're going to see is a governor who feels like he's got a mandate, and he is going to try to implement a number of controversial items that he spoke very clearly and openly about during the campaign, things like right to work, tax reform on his terms, and charter schools, and reversal to some degree or another of the Affordable Care Act implementation in Kentucky.
Are we surprised that this has not already been done, that he didn't somehow issue an order reversing the Connect Health Exchange?
Not entirely at this point, because as the campaign went on, I think it began to dawn on him, perhaps at the urging of Republican senators who represent disproportionately counties that rely upon Medicaid expansion, that might be have some political blowback for them, especially going into the elections where they hope to take the House. So I don't think at this point we're surprised he hasn't moved yet. But sooner or later, he will in some form or fashion. The question becomes, is he patient and willing to wait and take what he can get this time around with the hopes of conquering the House in November and then getting everything he wants probably next year?
Let me ask Leslie Clark briefly before we need to take a break from your perspective and from the point of view of a White House correspondent. The significance of Kentucky's governor being in such a role of opposition to the Affordable Care Act and is this a trend? Are we seeing this happening elsewhere?
I'm not certain if we're seeing it elsewhere, but I know it's certainly on the White House's radar, absolutely.
And has the president made any remarks, comments about the potential of, say, for instance, very specifically directed at Kentucky or states that might be considering similar action?
I don't know if he has, actually. I'm sorry about that. I've been on the campaign trail a little bit too much lately.
And so you actually, as part of you are on the campaign trail. Do you follow?
Yeah, every other week.
Do you follow a specific candidate, or how does that work out for you?
I had been covering Jeb Bush. I dipped briefly into the Bernie Sanders campaign, and now for the last few weeks I have been sort of tracking the Donald Trump.
Okay, very interesting. All right, we are due to take a short break. This is Eastern Standard. It's our Reporters Roundtable reviewing 2015. And your questions, comments, and stories are invited. WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST or get on the line, 800-621-8890. The major stories of 2015, what's on your mind? Do you really care about all this wrangling in Frankfurt? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com.
And it's American Pharoah pulling away late. American Pharoah rules the Derby.
Half-length lead over Divining Rod. And then it's Dortmund. Tale of Verve, a huge long shot, is making a move on the far outside. But American Pharoah is all by himself. He is 5 lengths in front as they come to the wire. And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa
American
have
Pharoah
won.
Kicks
the
away. American
Tale
Pharoah has opened up a 2-length lead as they come to the top of the stretch. And Frosted has moved up into second. And they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a 2-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won.
And American Pharoah just kept winning and winning and winning and then winning in this year's horse racing world. Horse racing had a huge year. The first horse in history to win the Grand Slam of American horse racing. This also marked the first year the Breeders' Cup was held in Lexington's Keeneland racing grounds. A major story? That's up to you. Let us know if you think that this was a major story. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. We're talking about the news of 2015, Reporters Roundtable, Ronnie Ellis with CNHI Newspapers, including the Richmond Register, Leslie Clark, White House correspondent for McClatchy with your only paper in Kentucky being the Lexington Herald Leader. Ryland Barton, Kentucky Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. 800-621-8890. Let me return briefly to the Bevin administration and the potential action on health care. Ryland, during the break, you were commenting that your projections on what's likely to happen related to health care in the Commonwealth.
Sure. Well, I mean, of course, it comes down to being anybody's guess. This is up to the governor. But, there's two different things going on. One is the Medicaid expansion, which, by executive order, Governor Beshear enacted and ended up adding over 400,000 people to the state's Medicaid rolls, providing them with health insurance. And then the other is the state health exchange, which is more or less an online tool to go and a marketplace for people to find different insurance plans. The Medicaid expansion would be considerably harder to roll back. And by harder, I mean it would take a much longer time. Governor Bevin will have to come up with an alternate plan. He says that he wants to model something after Indiana's model, and then he'd have to go through and essentially switch people onto this new plan, which he says would require people to pay into the system. So he's going to end up having to set up a whole bunch of deals to make this happen. It's just something that would probably end up taking a long time. Whereas the Medicaid, whereas the state health exchange, as former candidate for governor Jamie Comer said, it's essentially the Travelocity of a website in which you can go on and compare insurance plans. It's a little more complicated than that because these insurance plans have to set up agreements to be on that exchange, but it is considerably easier.
Not necessarily a big deal for people to switch their health
insurance.
Well,
I mean, it would end up probably being a big deal because the different rates provided by these insurance companies, the types of insurance companies, I mean, these people would end up being moved on to plans provided through the federal exchange. Now, one piece of fallout from switching to the federal exchange is that currently, using our state exchange, there's a 1% fee tacked onto insurance plans that pays for this exchange. If we switch to the federal program, it turns into a 3% fee. So that's just one thing that ends up, being it's one of the pieces of fallout that would end up happening from switching to the federal plan.
The proponents of keeping Connect contend that it works better than the federal exchange. It's tailored to Kentucky, and the insurance providers who are on Connect are much more receptive and flexible and so forth to dealing with Kentucky customers. These are supporters who don't want to see it go away. But nonetheless, they say it will cost in the neighborhood of $23 million to shut it down for all the IT work to transfer everything and integrate with the federal exchange. And I suppose, this is the exchange that was working so well that a Republican senator, Ralph Alvarado, at one point suggested that Kentucky might help pay for some of its budget problems by contracting with nearby states to operate their exchanges. It was working so well.
And Governor Beshear, of course, receiving much acclaim and much publicity nationwide for the exchange that he set up.
Yes, and of course, he very desperately wants to see it to continue, as well as the Medicaid expansion, because while it's not what he came into office running on, by the time he was leaving office, it really represented his legacy. And if Bevin is able to dismantle all of that, It will be to the detriment of Bashir's reputation and legacy.
Let me take it back to Leslie Clark. Yeah, I was going to say.
I was going to say that's kind of the argument that the White House has used on it. They've said that you know, these vows to dismantle the Affordable Care Act have been effective political strategy in many cases, but then it turns out to be not effective governing strategy once people have tried to do it.
Another issue that ties Kentucky politics to the national scene, we talked about the gubernatorial race. Ronnie Ellis, before the show, made a comment to me that he said there's been some speculation that the Trump campaign impacted the governor's race. Ronnie, what are you meaning by that?
Well, during the campaign, if you will recall, there were people like Rylan and I talking about in our stories, or in my case in columns, about the lack of interest in this race. And how quiet it was, especially out in rural Kentucky. You know, historically in Kentucky, the governor's race is the race of any four-year cycle. It's what excites Kentuckians the most, and they get the most. And no one was talking about it. Instead, what they were talking about was Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of voters who are receptive to Trump's message and tone found a kindred spirit in their minds in Bevin, and it was very beneficial to Bevin, along with the evangelical vote and just the Tea Party vote.
Leslie, how is Governor Bevin viewed in D.C.?
Well, by the Obama administration, with a lot of caution, I think, worried that perhaps other governors might follow him, although I guess most have not.
We did have a call from I interrupted you there, Leslie.
No, go ahead.
We had a call from Alexander from Knox County who wouldn't go on the air, but he said he would like to say that he'll be voting for Donald Trump if he's nominated, and there's simply no way around that. So we appreciate Alexander at least making contact with us, and we want to mention that we do have phone lines open. This is an interactive show. It's our reporters' roundtable discussing news of 2015, but our listeners invited to be on board with your questions, your comments, your personal stories, your observations about the top stories of 2015, 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Now, another area where Governor Bevin is in sync with some other political leaders in the country is this issue of the Syrian refugee crisis. And we had a conversation about that on our program here last week. What do we know about, whatever kind of impact a governor can have on the acceptance of refugees into the Commonwealth of Kentucky? I know in Indiana there was an issue, and the Governor Pence of Indiana actually interacted with the Archbishop over there because the Roman Catholic Catholic Relief Services apparently was sponsoring a Syrian family, and the church held out. And continue to move forward with its sponsorship. Do we see any action? Is there anything, any rumbling in Frankfurt right now about this issue?
I think the only rumbling was this is after Governor Bevin was elected, but he had not yet started in office, and he said that he would, he would basically turn away Syrian refugees while the state and I guess while the country kind of investigated this issue and came up with possibly more stringent ways to vet these incoming immigrants or refugees. And and Bashir at the time said that the state would continue to accept refugees. I don't know if there's been any update since then.
Well, I don't think there has been, but there's a political reality, I suppose, that may affect this. But legally, the governor really has no say in this. This is a federal decision and program. There are a few Syrian families already in Kentucky, mm-hmm. I think primarily in Louisville.
Yeah.
I don't know that we're on the map for a lot more or not. But Bevin, of course, believes in state sovereignty and that he can say no to the federal government on nearly everything. He said more than once during the campaign that he would tell the federal government to pound sand. But I don't think he has any legal authority to deny the placement of Syrian refugees in Kentucky.
Right. And the White House has held, conference calls with all the governors and various officials in some of the states to sort of counter some of their worries and say that they'll be open to sharing a number of information with them, such as how many people that they're settling and to go through the process involved with the screening. But they share the same thoughts that the governors don't have any legal standing to block it, that immigration is done at a federal level.
And what would governors do to stop refugees from coming into the state? Some kind of border control?
I really don't know
presumably
what they could do.
Fiscally, I don't know if they could, you know, financially stop agencies that assist refugees, but I really don't know legally what they could do.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that there's anything they can do. I suppose they could go to court. Again, Matt Bevin, on a number of issues, primarily on coal regulation and pollution regulation, but on other things as well. I mean, he made it a feature of his inauguration of saying that, talking about the 10th Amendment, I think he incorrectly interprets the 10th Amendment, but his interpretation is that the state has sovereignty, and as he put it, we will exercise that sovereignty and that authority. And we won't allow Washington to wag the tail in Kentucky. So, again, it's hard to predict what he will attempt to do. I think he is unlikely to be successful in his attempts.
We started off this segment of the show with clips of American Pharoah and some of the horse's victories leading to the Triple Crown and then also to the Breeders' Cup. What is the significance of that story for Kentucky? Is there a long-term result? The long-term effect on Kentucky from such a successful year in horse racing?
I think the hope is that it's a big boost for the horse racing industry. I mean, this is the first time the Breeders' Cup was in Lexington for a while. I think they want that to come back to Keeneland as soon as possible. I mean, it was just quite a spectacle. I mean, I think that's the thing. Horse racing for the majority of the country is such a – I think it's a bit of an odd sport to them. You know, the Kentucky Derby comes on once a year, and maybe there's a party for it, and they watch it and kind of catch up on exactly what horse racing is like. But I think this is, you know, something where the horse racing industry as a whole is hoping that more people are going to get interested in it because of, you know, having in some ways kind of a Michael Jordan to rally around.
It focuses the nation's attention on Kentucky and some of the more glamorous aspects of a relatively unglamorous state. And so it's good for Kentucky's image. It's good for tourism dollars. Secretariat, of course, who stood stud in Kentucky, I don't know for how many years before finally dying, was a regular stop for tourists to go and see. National basketball telecasts, where national commentators like Dick Vitale would be on the broadcast, they would show pictures of him, you know, posing with Secretariat. So I think American Pharoah is a star. There, you know, the Sports Illustrated just named Serena Williams the Sports Person of the Year, and there was a lot of blowback in Kentucky because they wanted American Pharoah to win that distinction. So, you know, I think it's good for Kentucky in terms of image. I always think it is a little misleading because it presents an image of Kentucky that has very little to do with what 99% of the people experience in a day-to-day environment.
Speaking of horse races, let's turn back to the presidential race. And I want to start with Leslie Clark and your impressions of the campaign of Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. And, of course, it's had some impact on how politics is occurring in the Commonwealth. It's going to change the process of selecting candidates for the Republican candidacy in Kentucky because we're going to end up with a caucus next year instead of a primary. Your observations there. Does Rand Paul have a snowball's chance? And what does this move toward a caucus in Kentucky mean nationally?
Well, I think it's too soon to rule anybody out, possibly. I mean, he's still up there on the main debate stage, although I think Donald Trump would like to push him off as fast as possible. He's made no secret of that. And it seems like anybody who tangles with Donald Trump lately sort of finds their campaign trailing. If you could look at Bobby Jindal as one example.
And what about the fact that, you know, the caucus? Is there any talk in D.C. about the fact that Kentucky switched to a caucus for this very specific purpose of allowing one candidate to run for both the Senate seat that he's almost certain to win as well as for the presidency?
I don't think so, because it's so further out than Iowa and New Hampshire and then the SEC primaries. I think that it hasn't reached people's radar yet.
In Ryland, the impact of a caucus instead of the primary, what is that going to mean for voter involvement? So many people out there, I'm sure, have no idea what is going to actually happen on the day when there would normally be a primary election.
You know, I'm not sure we know what the impact on the voter on the election day or caucus day will be, because Kentucky's caucus, as it is set up, is not like the Iowa caucuses. People will actually go to a polling location, go in and vote, as opposed to gathering and, you know, second choice and third choice and reaching whatever the required threshold of support may be. For the impact on Kentucky, I think it's going to turn out to be, the theory was that this might be around for a year, because it was initially designed to benefit Rand Paul so he could continue seeking re-election. I think the Republican Party is kind of excited about how this thing has evolved, and I think it's likely to stick around because we have 8 presidential candidates coming to Kentucky and have put up $15,000. They have some skin in the game. Normally, Kentucky's late May primary, you hear this complaint from Democrats and Republicans alike, is too late to have any impact on the nominating process. And so, consequently, Kentucky tends to be ignored. And with only 7 electoral votes or 8 electoral votes, it's not a big battleground state in the fall.
We don't see candidates.
As a rule, we do not. It has to be a very close election where every last delegate is being grasped for. But that won't be the case this spring, at least in the Republican primary. And I think in that sense, it's going to draw some attention to Kentucky and probably to Kentucky's benefit.
The other big effect of having the caucus is, I mean, the reason that it was set up in the first place, that Senator Paul is going to be running for president and for re-election as Senate. It's unclear how that's going to shake out, but, you know, the worry for Republicans is that, you know, Senator Paul is going to spend too much time running for president and not enough time running for reelection.
This is Eastern Standard. We're discussing the news of 2015, a reporter's roundtable, and we're interested in hearing from you. 800-621-8890. We'd be glad to get you on the air in the final segment. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality.
Why?
Pending.
What appeal is left?
Pending the appeal in the Sixth Circuit.
The appeal stays denied. Right. The injunction is the order that you're supposed to issue marriage license.
And we're not issuing marriage license.
The Supreme Court denied your stay.
We are not issuing marriage license today.
Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, our 2015 year in review, a reporter's roundtable. Our guests in the studio are Ronnie Ellis, reporter and columnist with CNHI newspapers, including the Richmond Register, and Ryland Barton, Kentucky Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. And on the line with us, Leslie Clark, White House correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. Can we agree, will everyone agree, that this was the major news story in Kentucky, the Kim Davis opposition to gay marriage and refusal to issue marriage licenses?
Oh, I think it was, absolutely.
Yeah, I would think so, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Leslie, from Washington, D.C., yeah, what was the perception?
Yeah, I was going to say that was not one that the White House was reluctant at all to wade into. I think the day that she was ordered to jail, the White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest stood at the lectern and said that, you know, success of our democracy depends on the rule of law, and there's no public official that is above the rule of law. And didn't put her by name, but said that the president wasn't above the rule of law, and neither was the Rowan County clerk. So they were quite happy to, be against Kim Davis.
Well, I mean, on the day of the Supreme Court decision, the rainbow lighting on the White House,
exactly.
a somewhat obvious support the issue.
Yeah. President Obama was a little behind his vice president in endorsing same-sex marriage, but he's been quite supportive of it since then.
And what does the same-sex marriage issue, what impact does that have on the 2016 presidential campaigns? Hillary Clinton, likewise, a little slow in getting on that wagon, was she not?
Right, yeah, absolutely, she was as well. But it's been very quiet, and the social issues have not been very prominent on the campaign trail yet. It's mostly been, I think, in the aftermath of the attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, the focus has been a lot on national security, and we just haven't heard much on the social issues yet. But I would imagine that Kim Davis will, she's obviously standing with her was sought pretty hotly by several of the Republican presidential candidates, so I would expect that it will reemerge as an issue.
And what about its impact on the presidential race in Kentucky? Again, despite, seven electoral votes and a relatively minor role in the overall outcome of the presidential race, do we see the social issue and the marriage issue being one that's going to be a major factor during this coming year? Ryland and Ronnie?
Well, yeah, I'd love to hear from your listeners as well on that.
Absolutely. 800-621-8890, our number.
I suspect that the issue plays a lot differently across the country than it does in Kentucky, and increasingly, especially in a presidential electorate, it's a different electorate that comes out in a presidential year nationally. We won't hear as much talk perhaps about certain social issues nationally as we have in the past, but we will in Kentucky because it is a significant issue in Kentucky. It was a significant influence on the gubernatorial election. Bevin adopted her cause very early. He went up there the day of the rally. He was photographed with her, along with Michael Huckabee, who kind of arranged the rally. They said it wasn't a political rally, but I've never been to a rally that felt more political. Mm-hmm. They had people on risers and a band and piped in music, and then Senator Ted Cruz also showed up that day, as well as Thomas Massie, the 4th Congressional District Congressman, Tea Party Congressman from Kentucky. So it may have, their Democrats are hoping in Kentucky that if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, with their history in Kentucky and with their association with Jerry Lundergan, over the years, who is father of our Secretary of State and former Kentucky Democratic Party chairman, that she will campaign here extensively, as she did in 2008 during the Democratic primary. I have a feeling they may be taking a look at polling on some of these issues and not be in Kentucky as much as they have been in the past. And I think this issue will be important in Kentucky, at least, in how the state votes.
Ryland, let's talk a little bit about your coverage on behalf of our Kentucky Public Radio station, your coverage of the Kim Davis issue in Round County and out. Is that Carter County where where she was in jail?
Yeah, that was Carter County and Grayson.
Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
Your impressions of that whole issue and its impact on Kentucky and its journalistic significance of obviously you don't often cover stories in Kentucky where you are surrounded by national media as well as our local and state media.
Yeah, I mean, it played hugely into on the national stage as well as, I mean, it ended up factoring pretty hugely into our governor's race as well. I mean, we were talking about lack of interest in the governor's race, and only around 30% of registered Kentuckians came out to vote on election day. But if there was one thing that did kind of get some traction over the summer, it was on these social issues, on same-sex marriage. And also briefly flash in the pan on the Jefferson Davis Monument in this state capitol rotunda, which they were talking about removing, but ended up deciding not to remove. But yeah, it factored hugely on the national stage. Everybody descended on the tiny little town of Grayson on their little county, on their county jail, pulled out the risers and the band and the choirs. You know, it's, I think for a lot of Kentuckians, it was disappointing because they felt that it framed Kentucky in a kind of an unusual backwards light in some people's opinions. I think for others, it was, I think for supporters of religious freedom, it really, it rallied this huge base. Kentucky became a hotbed. And she became this, a real figure of this religious freedom movement. I mean, the United States has a federal religious freedom restoration law. Kentucky has one. And all these laws, there's tons of lawsuits in which people are trying to use these laws to support or to defend their religious freedoms. And just as Kim Davis is doing right now. And I think that's that's one thing we'll probably see more and more over the years is people trying to use these. And she kind of set the tone for how that gets done.
There's still time for listeners to get involved in our conversation. We're discussing the news of 2015, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. You can email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. We did have an email from John in Berea, and John is asking, what patterns of voting were noticed among black voters in the last election? He says, I'm especially interested in two things. What was the participation rate? What percentage? And second, what percentage voted from an angry desire to punish real and perceived racism in the Kentucky Democratic Party? This email from John in Berea. And I assume when he talks about the last election, is he talking about the gubernatorial race or is he talking about the presidential race? Not quite sure about that.
I suspect if he's talking about from the African-American perspective, the African-American voter perspective, he's talking about the governor's race and the perception among some in the community that Democrats are there at election time for African-Americans, that then not much improves. And also, obviously, the inclusion on Bevin's ticket of a lieutenant governor, Janine Hampton, who is in the first African-American elected statewide office in the state of Kentucky. They, of course, championed the cause of charter schools, which are popular in West Louisville for some areas over there and supported by African-American pastors. You know, I don't have the breakout by actual percentage and vote numbers. I do believe that Jack Conway, the Democratic nominee, his efforts suffered among African-American voters because if you look at the election returns, two Democrats who won, Andy Beshear for Attorney General, Allison London Grimes for Secretary of State, and a losing Democrat, Adam Edlin for Auditor, all ran ahead of Conway in his home county of Jefferson County. And I think a lot of that probably came from the African or lack of enthusiasm in the African-American community.
As soon as the returns came in from Louisville, and although Attorney General Conway won that district, it was just, you know, you knew it probably wasn't going to turn out well for him because he didn't get the flying colors that everybody had thought that he needed to win. And I mean, one of the big factors was there was a flash in the pan during the campaign season of Governor Beshear didn't appoint there weren't any African-Americans appointed to the University of Louisville Board of Trustees. And there was just this moment where Attorney General Conway didn't comment on it. And he ended up actually ruling that Beshear was out of compliance by making that appointment, or that didn't have any African-Americans on that board. But still, there was a bit of that hesitation was critical to some African-American voters.
Let me get a caller on the air. This is Ann from Jessamine County. Ann, thank you so much for calling Eastern Standard. By the way, the number, if you'd like to get on board in the final minutes of today's show, 800-621-8890. Ann, go right ahead.
Well, I'm a little behind what you're currently talking about, but the Kim Davis clerk that you were that matter is what I wanted to address. I just think that what she was doing represents what I perceive to be rather pervasive in Kentucky is this sense of moral relativism. And, you know, especially in light of her background, it just came across as highly hypocritical. I'm sorry, there's a siren in the background. But I think that even though I can understand her trying to stand up for what her morality, part of it anyway, was, I think it's an embarrassment to Kentucky, and it kind of proves that the state, in many ways, is behind, just in terms of diversity and acceptance and the fact that she didn't even comply with the law. I can't believe she still holds her office.
All right, Ann, thank you. We're glad to hear from you on this week's show. Again, 800-621-8890. If you'd like to chime in on the issue of what are the major stories of 2015 or a comment on one of those specific stories, with us in the studio are Ronnie Ellis and Ryland Barton. On the line, Leslie Clark of McClatchy Newspapers, including the Lexington Herald Leader. One thing we have not spent much time discussing so far, and we really should talk a little bit more about the issue of terrorism, homeland security, and so forth, the Paris attacks, the San Bernardino attack, impact that's going to have on us going forward. And maybe, Leslie Clark, you could address those issues from the Washington perspective.
Yeah, well, I think we saw the best indicator of that the other night at the Republican debate in Las Vegas. It pretty much dominated the entire debate. You really didn't hear many of the questions that were asked or many of the answers were given or anything other than, you know, how do we respond to this idea that there could be another case of terrorism on U.S. shores and how to go overseas and defeat the Islamic State.
From the perspective of Kentucky voters, Kentucky citizens, what are the concerns being raised within the Commonwealth? Is this an issue beyond something such as the Syrian refugee topic?
Yeah, well, I think it's an issue. I don't know what the connection is between people's fear and concern and what, you know, state government does and has authority over. I think this is a major issue in all of politics right now. I mean, there's a reason we call it terrorism. People are frightened. They feel vulnerable. I think it affects how they act in the voting booth.
I think if there's one way in which it spills out to the state politics or state governance is that there's probably not – I mean, there's just not much support for increased gun control in Kentucky. That's something we've seen time and time again. From both parties, there's very little support for changing the state's gun laws.
And actually, one topic I wanted to talk more extensively about that we should probably bring up at this point as well, there was a shooting of a police officer here in Madison County, a Richmond police officer that impacted a major portion of certainly of central Kentucky. How much significance was the shooting of Officer Daniel Ellis? Certainly a major story in this region of the Commonwealth. What impact does that story and the show of support and the grief that was shown in Richmond, Madison County in central Kentucky?
I think that was... that's definitely something that's gotten to the ears of the state's lawmakers. And several shootings happened in Kentucky this year as well. Officer Ponder in western Kentucky. There's been proposals to increase the bulletproof rating on trooper cars, and there's also proposals to kind of increase funding for Kentucky State Police because they don't they have kind of a raised structure that they feel isn't doesn't reward their officers well enough. There's definitely a lot of support from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, it seems, for kind of increasing safety for officers.
Denise from Lexington, thank you for calling. We're not going to get you on the air because we just really don't have time. But Denise apparently chiming in with agreement on the issue of Kim Davis and the image of Kentucky. In the last couple of minutes we have for our program, as we talk about the news of 2015, crystal balls for 2016. What are the major things that are going to rise and those that we can actually anticipate? Maybe Leslie Clark could kick us off with what do you think will be the major issues in the coming year?
I think we're going to continue to see an incredibly chaotic, eventful presidential race as it narrows down and gets into 2016.
And
perhaps there was, I wanted to call your attention to a bit of bipartisanship on the Senate floor as we were here talking, that the Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid both took to the Senate floor to insist that they have a good working relationship.
Oh, my. Okay. that is breaking news as
yes.
of this Thursday morning. Going forward into 2016, Ronnie Ellis?
Well, I think in Frankfurt, the continuing battle over the House for control of the House, then it's a budget session, a budget year. We have a much different sort of governor. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of budget he proposes. I'll be interested to see if perhaps he starts running into some Republican reservations in opposition as well.
And Ryland Barton.
Yeah, first thing in 2016 is the legislative session. We're going to see if some of these long-held Republican issues get any more traction, if they're able to pick off any Democratic votes in the House. Big issues like right to work, like the prevailing eliminating the prevailing wage. I think you'll also see probably some social issues come up as kind of quasi roll call votes. So something on abortion, maybe to get House Democrats to vote against it. And then going into election season, they'll have that on their record and Republicans will be able to put that in their faces.
All right. Thanks to our guests, Ryland Barton, Leslie Clark and Ronnie Ellis. And happy new year a couple of weeks in advance. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers are Noah Day and Brian Burkhart. Technical director today, Brian Bartlett. Reminder, the show is available as a podcast online and will be repeated on the air Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Write to us with your comments, questions, suggestions for 2016, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in.